for having me. It's really nice to be here. I'm going to read mainly from my newest book, which came out earlier this year. Maybe do a couple of quotes for myself and one, and then I'll finish up with a couple of new prose poems. There are quite a lot of prose poems in this book as well, of which this is one. It was written as a commission for an anthology of poems about Lewis Carroll's Alice books. So it doesn't really respond to any particular incident in either of those texts, more engaging with the general atmosphere within them and in particular the way that they model the relationship between truth and power, which concludes that truth is the possession of the most powerful person, whatever they said at any given time. It's not in my voice. Wonderland. It came to me of a sudden that my neighbour was a threat to peace, security, the nation. Previously I had had no sense of this, but I knew it to be true, so I set about letting the people know who should know, and I must say it was a source of pride when, on the basis of my information, he was carried away for questioning, his face blank as a moon. I dream sometimes that my neighbour is a nut in a cluster of nuts hanging on a tree. They're out of reach and beautiful, glinting in the sun, and my dream self wants to grab one. I don't know what it means, but did I say that the Queen called afterwards to offer her congratulations? I said to her, "Your Majesty," and here I grew feet taller than my normal stature. What you see is what you get, and I am a personage who knows what he sees. She liked that, though, the strangest thing. She complained of snow when one felt quite clearly it was balmy and the depths of summer. Flowers blossoming to the waist, bees whipping pollen into shivered combs. It's not that evident from my accent anymore because I've been in Scotland for 10 years now nearly, but as Rosie mentioned, I am from Belfast. And this is a Belfast poem. It's set in the early 1990s, so kind of ahead of the ceasefires and ultimately the achievement of the Good Friday Agreement, but with the sort of scent of that better time detected on the wind within it. A lot of the work in this book is quite surreal. This isn't any exception. So although there are some factual details within it, it's less an attempt to kind of give a realist portrait of the city at that time than to inhabit its psyche. It's called In the Annum. In the annum of the weather, of Anderson and Macaulay, the linen store, of wind flinging itself like an illegal logger on the scent of mahogany, ceaselessly along Royal Avenue's brittle core. In the annum of the occupants before the annunciation of Tesco. In the annum. In the annum when the public chose as its favoured means of adornment of the civitas and bird murder, the malleable beauty of plastic, flung with a gay abandon in its various forms, this to the wind like a logger seeking mahogany. When the river choired solemnly a symphony of plastic, accompanied by bellows and drums. In the annum. In the annum of the water bomb, of dog turds crusted on the street and the key to the kingdom. In the annum of the girl's shoe with a key in the heel and of Lloyd Grossman's through the keyhole, of the loch's coagulate scum. In the annum of the one known homeless one, of five lighters for a pound. The annum of the underground melody. In the annum that preceded American Beauty. In the annum of the ultrasound of the city, in the annum of the wind that stung like an illegal logger sniffing out mahogany through the packed straits of the forest like a disease, and strummed to the river's choked serenity, and past the party where a child won shoes with keys in the heel to ploy with the fingers of the one known homeless one. In the annum of the kingdom come, where dirt-filed fingers ran like birds in the loft of the brim, up and down the throat of a whistle, a clutch of green-tipped metal in the hands of the homeless one, as senseless and absolute as rain. In the annum of the end of days, though scarcely recognised as such, the unknown herald brought to them a different voice. that 2014, but it's a poem that I kind of feel like I need to read every time I come out at the moment, just because of the fucking disaster that's on the horizon. I grew up in the suburbs of Belfast, so although I grew up in Belfast in the 1980s, my childhood was sort of more becalmed than anything else. I was often really bored, had to make my own amusement. And this poem is about one of the kind of wizard reasons that I came up with to try and make my life a bit more interesting, which failed due to the failure of nerve of somebody else. It's called Sometimes Nothing, which is a play on something that Elizabeth Bishop said: sometimes everything looks like poetry and sometimes nothing does. She never did it, the girl you were supposed to meet in pink slippers and dressing gown, in what seemed the dead of night after the world had gone to bed. Sodium lights still garnished the suburban street with the gladsome hue of territory. You waited on the curve of the road. There was nothing in particular to see. In what claimed to be the dead of night, you stood alone at the mouth of her development. Sodium lights still salad dressed the street. What were you waiting for? You'd always known she wouldn't do it. You leaned flimsily against the curve of the road, where the remnants of a wood you'd never had the name for scythed on its cluttered stream through the new developments, and no bough juddered in the capricious night. You stood gilded by the sodium light, as fat forms riffled through your parents' garden. You fought to keep yourself concealed from the nothing that was there. You wanted to go midnight walking. Where were you going to walk to? Through the developments, the pepper sniff of wood. You scuffling down the road in your slippers and your wee fleece dressing gown. You went home again, you climbed the creakless stair. You dreamt the dreams that were appropriate. My mum's mother was a professional ballroom dancer, pretty good one. I think she was All-Ireland champion a couple of times. And she ran a studio in central Belfast where she gave classes during the week, and then on weekend evenings she would hold dances, which were at the kind of peak of their popularity in the 1950s. She died when I was 11, by which point she was 81, so I'd only ever known her as a private person, not as a professional person. I took a notion a few years ago to look her up and see if she'd kind of left any footprint online. She hadn't really. There were a couple of photos of her, and apart from that, just one or two entries on a thing called the Belfast Forum, which is like a discussion board where people reminisce about the Belfast of their youth. And somebody had put up a post on this: does anybody remember Betty Staffs? That being her maiden name and her professional name. So I looked at what people had said on it, and they weren't very nice. And this is the this is the result. It's a sestina, so already kind of quite a proposition to self, which I made worse for myself by using octopus as one of the end words. Pass on my. So it does show the strain in a couple of places, but it's kind of meant to. Betty Staffs. In retrospect, it turns out that her bouncer was like an octopus, nimbling across the floor to take his fill from the bar, perched back sweetly at his post before a body would think to lick. It's the 1950s, so she doesn't have cameras on the door or on the dance floor. He flashes his teeth, parades the tart liquor on his breath to the queue of nice specimens from the shankle who, in a breath, will shift their coloration like mimic octopuses, stepping out neatly and daintily in pairs across the floor, picking out from the clutch of men at the bar with expert eyes the silver-haired foxes in their 50s who keep them in drink, and the young bucks with whom they'll take up post for the slower numbers. His back straight as a post, Betty's partner steers her through a tango while the punters catch their breath. She was a one child when she came here to work, But by the 1950s, Betty's living the life. She's like something out of Octopussy, or some such yet-to-be-invented model for glamour, and there seems no bar to her success. The mastery of the dance floor isn't everything, and there is space on Betty Staff's floor that you wouldn't want. No matter the scores of bills she posts in the city's theatres and tea shops, the high-end hotel bars. Betty's a snob, they say, under their breath. When you go out dancing, you want to go Octopus, and there's no jiving at Betty's, and this is the 1950s, and where else can you not go jiving in the 1950s? Who does the stiff bitch think she is? Would it floor Betty if she knew this? Would it sour her puss to know that her dance hall is the hall of last resort for the post-pub heading for the swinging 60s crowds? Put to it, an octopus can hold its breath for 30 minutes out of water, can navigate a bar of land as expertly as Betty Staff holds herself at the bar. Things won't always be like they are in the 1950s, though Betty's already learned to hold her breath by the 50s, not that you'd know to watch her move across the floor. Betty believes in appearances. She knows how to keep her post. At home, her husband flails like an octopus. More than once, he will knock her to the floor, free of breath. But to the jewel-clad notion of the post-war 1950s, Betty will play the mother octopus. Lengthen your neck, die Nacht ist wunderbar. In ever more deadly earnest. I might post that on the Belfast Forum at some point. Just by way of apology to the octopi, a short riposte from another animal which pointedly refused my advances, albeit they were well meant and in its own interest. An encounter. Espied the kitten on the road in the country outside Dundalk, thought to take it home with me. This, my first reckoning with a feral cat. It bit, spat, even mustered a fart from the reaches of its armoury. I loosed it in a nettle patch and went upon my way, whereat the hissing slowly dimmed and died. And there, on the uncontroverted throne of its scalding freedom, the little fucker sat. A snicker tall and a hiccup wide. One single, snarling, animated burr. Sun drenched the ears with glory. Dew glittered on the risen back like pride. It really would have done better to come home with me. My partner is from the Isle of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides, where there is little by way of fauna, and also by way of flora, and pretty much of anything except stones and bog and rain and wind. As a result of having grown up in that kind of blasted landscape, he's particularly poor about the names of trees and plants, which is something that I used to ribbon about quite a lot as the child of parents, and particularly a father who, when we were kids and were out for walks, would stop every 2.5 minutes and go, look, and tell you what it was and how to identify it. However, he does have his own bodies of bespoke knowledge, and he sure as hell knows how to cross a bog, which it turns out I don't. The title of this just means person from this in Scottish Gaelic. Special. Leosok. The song of your faithful is like life rolled whimpering through a mangled backwards. Your trees are hair whipped stiff behind a ghoul that's only head. Instead of greenery, you have stripped backery. Instead of mammals, the mutant plague. On a thin road into the level dark, two taxis angle frail antennae. Here is the sky, here is the sky, heavier on my head than I want to know it. Licking the flesh from my temples as we walk like my supple skin or sorbet. Here are the bog which, though you don't know the names for anything, you read in the leap before you land. and here am I, hip snapped like a fowl's in its brackish consomme. Since that book came out, it was handed in about 18 months ago, and since then I haven't really written very many poems. That sort of run me out of poems, I think. The things that I have written have been mainly prose of one kind or another, some autofiction, some essays, and alongside those longer things, a few short pieces that have manifested so far as prose poems. So I'll finish up with a couple of them. The first one is about something that happened to me when I was a kid. As I mentioned, I grew up in the suburbs, which is a space where I think you can sort of chance your arm at getting away with almost anything in the, and there'll be a fair likelihood that you won't be detected. So a couple of times a guy in his, probably in his 20s when I was about 6 or 7, parked his car in the cul-de-sac that we lived in and exposed himself to me and tried to get me to get into the car and engage with him. And so that's what this is about, but it ended up being more about the effort to write something about that that felt sort of legitimate to me. It mentions a painting, La Nuit Étoilée, which is a Van Gogh Starry Night, but it's not the one in New York. It's a different painting with a similar name in the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, where I've been a couple of times, and both times that I was there, that painting just had a queue of people taking photos of it and taking their photos with it. So it's called the Masterpiece. Mid-afternoon, butterflies ping against the car's hot metal casing. You roll the window down and sink into the sweaty fabric, realign your mirrors, wait. You are a mouth, and you are a set of hands. A sausage. I don't like sausages. Not even a voice. A musical motif. A dream and not a dream. A character I am inventing. A cubist effort. Why would you even bother, sort of thing? Viz. A crap Picasso. One of those weird paintings where a season is a profile is in fact a barrow load of fruit. Here, look at this. Artfully deposed. A hey you, answer me, turn around, become a subject, though really for what? Poor shadow, it is hardly artistry. Rather, I would leave you there in the hot June sun, or whatever time of year it was, setting out your meek stall in the driver's seat, forming your obscure narrative of pain and operations. Girl equals sympathy. Let's make it a DeLorean. I won't reach in it now as I wouldn't then, and oops, is that an intruder? May you try and not get up the speed. May you be pinned there like, I don't know, a butterfly, spinning with your tires bald and your cock aglay, in the freeze-framed cul-de-sac like an exhibition hall. Or better, be it nuit étoilée, cues, fathomless queues of people snapping, selfies too. And fuck it, I could smack this pony all day, but I came for the Cezannes, the Rouen Monets. I did not come merely to look at you. My mum said to me, I was on the phone to my mum for a while today because she's having a knee operation in her room. Apropos of, I'm not sure what she mentioned, that Belfast International Airport was recently voted the worst airport in Europe, possibly the worst airport in the world. I'm not sure which, whichever. I was kind of pleased to hear it because the last time that I was in there, which was about a month ago, one of their security guards who was barking orders at everyone within barking distance decided to command me to cheer up. Which happened to me all the time when I was a younger woman in Belfast. Men were always saying that to me, and I didn't realise. I thought I was just like morose looking or something. It was only years later when I heard other people talking about it on the TV or the radio that I copped that it's a sexist thing. I never had anything to say when I was a younger woman, and at 39, I was just so shocked that he'd said it to me and that he'd said it at work. that I still had nothing to say, which annoyed me even more than the fact that he'd said it. But afterwards, I did have something to say. So the cheer up thing kind of occurs near the start, and then towards the end, there's mention of men coming up to women when they're pregnant and touching their stomachs and going, "Look at you," which is apparently also a thing. So those are kind of the pulls that it works between. And the voice that it's in is kind of a communal teenage girl voice. It also mentions priests. I don't mean literal priests, I mean intermediaries, which hopefully is evident from the context. Thank you so much again for having me and for listening. And this is called Tapestry. We have belching competitions, wear our shirts bright white, or our socks are itchy. We spend our long days trying to find somebody to victimize. We fight mainly with hair. We know something about French and literature and maths and science, history, geography, home ec. Some of us play instruments. We are Renaissance women. Sometimes we have to kneel and have our skirts measured by a teacher with a ruler and a squat ginger moustache. Cheer up, the men offer as they pass us in the street. It might never happen. Are your feet really that big? They breathe at us in corners, on stairs, in the nightclubs that we are too young and they are too old to be in. They carry the right to remark upon us in their chests like air. The stale musk of the men hangs in corridors, exhales from the upholstery of the buses that we take to school and town. We smell of blueberries and sure, green lip balm from the body shop. Our hair is glossy. Our mothers force shopping through the streets and bicycles or cars down the road. At Jesus, would you credit this traffic? Don't bump against the shopping bags. How many times would you get out from under my feet? Our mothers have corns and bums that look big in everything. We will never be them. They iron our bright white shirts and bowl our socks and cook wholesome dinners we refuse to eat. We lie on beds in their houses, talking into phones, saying not much conspiratorially to each other. We watch Dirty Dancing and Top Gun on repeat. You're nothing but a wee skitter. You're you. Love? All right, love. How's it going? The men are everywhere, purple and pint smelly. They are not our fathers, though they may be somebody's. They loom at us. They look at us directly in the eye. They are not bookmen, but they are everybody's educators. Priests, shamans, the world is in the sandy words they speak. They want to get us pregnant, and they will. They are in Caesar's service and will be rewarded. Our fathers are not in on it. Something has made our grave fathers stop their mouths. Under thin scooted shirts, oh-ho, the bras we do or do not need, plain or decorate, may be detected. We are playing swing tunes in harmony on bass recorders. We are filling our minds with notes. We are practicing our French verbs, singing them in key with the teacher with the long skirt, the Rapunzel rope of tresses screeched into a bun. We are wandering the bleached ground of the 20th century. Something must be done about us. We have it all wrong, and our fathers are not intervening. They are hopeless. A curtain flew in from somewhere, and it curtailed our father's sight. The men try to emanate their sperm into our dreams at night. When the guard is down, when the stopped pores of us are open, they will have us, be the route there, physical or magical, whatever avails. If history has taught them anything, it has, it's that every small action has its place. That the war is with the foot soldiers, every square of turf, every road end stood at, every jutted jaw is a stay. In our dreams, the men display themselves. Like goblins, they appear and utter sperm out of their mouths. We are walking through a sea of it. We shut our mouths and noses. We are frog spawn incubators. Nothing could be worse than this. Our mothers wilt under the pressure of our two gold throats, our two lustrous hair, the bellies of us and the sidings. If they are wise to the ways of the men, they do not let it show. The men are waiting for a time when they can pat us on the belly, to the world turn, look at ye, with beaming smiles. When it is all as was promised, when they have carried out their parts. For Caesar gives them not much, but the god-o-like duty of remaining. Hold the fort there, hold this little thread. and they take up their positions and, like pez heads, stop their clicking throats with the sugared pellets, which are the once upon a time of it, which are where it all starts. Thanks very much.